Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The stupid. That is 45% of the undecideds, John. They are the swingest of the swing voters. And they, as they always do, will decide this election.
And it's a fascinating thing. Now, how do you break down the stupids?
Well, ironically, it's a rather complex demographic. You've got your paste eaters, your numbskulls, your nitwits, your f-tards. People whose head gets stuck in jars when they eat pickles. That's a surprisingly large component. People who lose arguments to babies, douche nozzles, tiger petters.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm not familiar with all the lingo. Tiger petters.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's people who go into zoos and they pet tigers. Let's push on. People who jump up and down on frozen lakes to check if the ice is strong enough to hold them. Shaved gorillas who've somehow acquired driver's licenses. The voluntarily lobotomized. And finally, Cubs fans.
Cubs fans. What do you think? Now, they're... Cubs fans are considered a subset of the stupid.
Oh, absolutely, John. I mean, they've had 100 years to figure out that what they want will never happen, yet they still yearn for it.
And that is stupid.
Yes, it's very
stupid. Because the Cubs will never win.
No, that's right, John. The Chicago Cubs will never, ever win the World Series.
No, they won't.
They won't do it.
They've made God angry.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. If Mike says he's growing a pair, he's literally growing a pair. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak. Right.
Hey, everybody, wake up. Wake up, wake up, you're early, you're early for church. Wake up, wait, we changed the time on you last night. Hey, you sure you got the right time? What does it say in your clock? It's 4 o'clock right now. 4:05:53, somewhere in the world, but not right here, actually.
It's confusing that my devices all update themselves because I wake up and I'm like, did it fix it? Am I supposed to do it? What am I supposed to do? I had to Google it this morning.
You know, this is
the
reliance on technology is terrifying.
It's marvelous.
Because I use the cell phone as my alarm. And what if, the GPS decides not to go? And there we are. Of course, I'd have an extra hour. But still, I'd wake up at noon. And then... That'd
be a problem.
That'd be a problem. That'd be a terrible problem.
Have dead air? Denny'd fix it.
Yeah, Denny would take care of it.
I'm on it.
I know. Denny's just been champing at the bit to take over the show. He's hoping that...
I don't know a lick about gardening, but man, we will make it fun. That's all I know.
Hey, you know what? I don't know a lick about gardening, so there you go.
Good thing Sarah's here.
Exactly. That's why we have Sarah Batka here. And that's Lisa Albrecht. Denny Sheeter. It's a Mike Novak Show, and we're a couple of days before the election, and I had to play my favorite show opening for the election time, that it has become tradition now on the Mike Novak Show to play the Jon Stewart clip about Cubs fans being among the stupid voters. And if you haven't made your mind up yet, I mean, and that's their whole point. It's like a couple of days before the election, if you haven't made your mind up, I don't know what to tell you. You know, okay, here's what I'm going to tell you. Vote for Barack Obama, okay? Go in the voting booth. If you haven't made up your mind, I'm not going to try to convince you with arguments. I'm just going to say, vote for Barack. Just do it, okay? If you don't know, that's okay. Calm down. I'm telling you how to vote. Just go on and do that. Now, for the other candidates, you know, you're on your own. You got to kind of actually look at who's in your district and what's going on. And actually, that's part of what we're going to talk about today in the second hour, especially. We are going to be talking to Jeff Goringer from the League of Conservation Voters, to the great frustration of many of us in the environmental community. There's been absolutely no discussion about the environment in this. And Lisa's just, you're really frustrated, aren't you? I'm really frustrated.
I sat through all the debates going, okay, come on, next question's going to be us. Next question's going to be us. I mean, it's the first time, I think, since, what, 1976, that they have not discussed climate during debate.
Is that true?
Debate.
I heard, I have not researched it,
but I heard it on someone else's talk show radio.
How dare you listen to another talk show?
I'm learning, you know, so that I can increase my talent when I'm here on Sunday mornings.
And we were all frustrated. And it's a complete, you know, we'll get into this in the second hour. But my opinion, complete failure by the corporate press.
And I feel like even if the moderators didn't ask the question, it's not as though they didn't push their own agenda during answers. So it could have been brought up by either side. And of course, I think that President Obama should have.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's the opportunities were there. You could drop that in. You know, you didn't have to wait for somebody to.
It's not as though the answers to every question addressed the question asked.
No, but that's not the point of the debates anyway. Right. That's not the way that works. So second hour, and this is a little dangerous on my part because I don't get that heavily into political stuff unless it relates to the environment, you know, issues. I tend to focus on issues in terms of the environment and not so much of this political back and forth. You know, I that whole thing, and I know that that's a lot of what happens on this radio station. Sometimes I find it really frustrating. I just do. It's like, okay, can we do better than just yelling at each other and shouting names at each other? On the other hand, these are important issues. This is an important election. I voted this past week, and what was cool was I went to the, I voted at the Humboldt Park Boathouse.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah. That's where my ward had it. Well, there are a number of places you could go. And I went because that was in my ward, the 26th ward. And the guy said, oh, good timing. I said, really? What are you talking about? He said, yesterday we had lines out the door. And I went there on a Thursday. And I'm thinking, Wednesday during the day, they had lines out the door.
It's incredible.
It is. Right. And it was taken a lot, you know, and have you seen the photographs on the videos
Florida.
Of Florida? Now that's grounds for impeachment, if you ask me, as a governor. It's just insane that the governor can manipulate thing, and what are folks doing? You know, one of the most frustrating things for me is watching reports on television, people saying, well, the lines are out the door, and the reporters go, yeah, well, that's just too bad. And even the pundits go, look at, they're trying to suppress the vote. And I'm thinking, what are you doing about it? Why don't you report on what's being done about it? Where are the lawyers? Where's the Justice Department? Where's the state Justice Department? Where are the civil rights people? Yeah, I know that we've got people coming in. The greatest democracy in the world, has to have European and United Nations observers at our elections this year. That says everything you need to know about the democracy in America right now. Is we need to have observers. to make sure we don't have fraud in our elections. Holy smoke. We are now officially... Where's my bell?
Get it.
Get the bell.
Ding, 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 ding.
It's down here. We are now officially a third world country. Thank you very much. I know. We are. It's Rick Scotts of the world in Florida that are turning us into a third world country. You can put the finger right there. There we are. There's the guy. And the attorney generals, I'm sorry, not attorney generals, but secretary of states of states like Ohio. What's that guy? Houston or whatever his name is. I forget what his name is. Those are bing, bang. Those are the guys turning us into a third world country. Nice going. All right.
You're on fire today, buddy.
I am. And that's the second hour. And so the dangerous thing that I'm saying is I'm actually going to invite your phone calls there, 763-973-9...
Oh, man.
I'm so worked up. 773-763-9278 in the second hour to talk politics. But as it relates to the environment, because we got races in Illinois. We've got, neighboring Wisconsin. We've got Indiana. Folks listening, and I want to hear from you, as I said, when we talk to Jeff Goringer from the League of Conservation Voters. In this hour, in just a second, and you can get her on the phone. Okay, great. Denny's doing that. Mary T. McClellan from Glacier Oaks Native Plant Nursery. See, this will calm me down. We'll talk about the holidays. The holidays!
Immediately after Halloween's over, start putting up the Christmas decorations.
Exactly. We lurch. I walked into like a Walgreens or whatever, and all the Christmas decorations were out.
Oh, they put them out, I think, the same time they put the Halloween stuff out this year.
Maybe.
It was no...
Why not just put them out in July? Come on.
Sure.
You could sell them better. You might actually get rid of them. And she's going to talk about living Christmas trees. I always thought that was a... Not such a great idea, and I'm finding out that maybe it is not such a bad idea. So we will do that. But before we do, I have to talk to Sarah here because she brought in the most wonderful gift. And it's in the refrigerator, Denny, so don't you touch it.
Oh.
Don't you get your hands on that.
All right. All
Denny,
right.
I forgot that there was four of us, so I'll bring some more next week.
Oh, no, he'll have mine because I'm headed to Wisconsin to canvass.
Okay. And good for you, Lisa, for going out and canvassing. And that's the other thing. If you haven't, if you have a chance to make phone calls, if you have a chance to canvass, Lisa's going to Wisconsin to knock on doors and scare old people.
You know, it's surprisingly easy. So, walk,
to scare
even need...
old people?
The canvassing part.
Mm. Oh, that's what you meant.
But all you need to do, you don't even need to sign up in advance, really. Walk into a campaign office. They're everywhere. They're plastered with signs. And tell them that you'd like to knock on a few doors. And really, it's just a matter of walking up and you find out, if people have registered, do they understand how, in Wisconsin, you can still register even on the day of the election. I think Illinois finished yesterday.
With the early voting.
Even registering. So I think yesterday was the last day you could register.
Okay.
You could register and vote yesterday.
Yeah.
If you haven't registered yet, I think you're out of luck for Tuesday. But in Wisconsin, you can continue. All you need is a driver's license or you need your last four digits of your social and a bill. And so it was encouraging. Most of the folks that we talked to had either already voted or knew exactly where they were headed and who they were voting for. But there was a couple of people who said, I don't remember where my polling place is. So we were able to point them in that direction.
Good to see you. My Skinny Garden writes, wish I was in the studio with you today. I'm so fired up, too. Good for you. Good for you. Should be fired up.
All right. What's in the refrigerator?
Oh.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm starving now. You can't just tease food.
Sarah, what did you bring in for us today?
The hens laid some eggs. I get probably about 4 or 5 a day. So I don't eat a lot of eggs. So I'm happy to share.
4 or 5 a day from how many hens?
5. So about 1 egg. Per chicken per day.
You have 5 chickens?
I do. Mm-hmm.
How come you have so many?
That's a good number, a good odd
is
number.
Is it? Well, I thought most people have like 1 or 2.
I was hoping for 3 or 4 girls, but I got straight run. So I took 7, hoping for 3 or 4 girls, and ended up with 2 roos and 5 hens.
Oh, man, that is a radio segment waiting to happen. Bring those chickens in. Come on.
Can we do a remote?
Yeah. Broadcast from my house. That would be fun.
Yeah.
We can get Rich Cowgill and we can hook up the Ustream.
Yeah, and put together a cabinet or something. Mighty House style.
Maybe they could build me a condo, a little chicken coop condo.
You know, you know what? Cowgill would probably do that.
I'm sure he's listening right now, getting it ready as we speak.
I think it's just so cool that I have fresh eggs that I'm taking home. And every Sunday I can say, Sarah, got any eggs?
Now that we know that there's five a week, or five a day.
Five a day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My goodness. You could sell these. You'll be rich.
Well, I don't know about that.
After the cost of chicken feed.
And before we get to Mary T., the other thing I'm going to bring up real quick is that you're going to hear a little thing on it in just a second, but the Bioneers is still going on today, and you were at the Bioneers. I signed up. I had a choice yesterday. I could go to Northerly Island, and you can see the photos from that on my website, mikenovak.net. I went to Northerly Island and picked up native plants that they are digging up because they're doing ecological restoration there. It's kind of funny. They've got a natural area that they're redoing. So it's they're taking out native plants so they can put in native plants. It's weird. And I'm going to have folks from the Park District on the show at some point to talk about that whole project up there because it's a big deal. Like 40 acres in the southern part of Northerly Island are going to be restored. But they were giving away plants, little blue stem and some asters, New England aster and other things, goldenrod. And it was just cool. So I loaded up the car. Which was already loaded with stuff, and it was just, you know, it was funny. I was driving home with a car full of plants, and then I started noticing spiders everywhere in the car. You know, little hitchhikers there that, there's one crawl across a dash right there. Oh, look at that. One's dropping down there. I thought, with all the plants I had in the car, I said, I wonder how many spiders I've got in this car right now.
With nature.
There must be hundreds of them. tell me about your experience at Bioneers very quickly.
Oh, Mike, it was fantastic. I'm so glad that I went, and thank you, Pam and Lan, for your generous offer, for us to go. So thank you so much. I had the opportunity to check out the Dill Pickle Co-op, talk about, starting a co-op in your own community and the challenges that they faced. But it's so rewarding. And they're willing to share their experience with other people who are interested in starting a co-op. We talked about the sugar beet co-op that's starting in Oak Park. And
does that mean they just grow sugar beets?
No.
Oh, okay. It's just the name of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. But so many fantastic presenters yesterday. I got to meet Mike Repkin.
Oh, I love Mike. He's been on the show several times. In fact, again, it's time to have him on. He's with Urban Habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And great people doing great, great work in the city.
So a lot of fantastic presenters. And I was very excited to be able to learn from Blake Davis. He's an instructor over at IIT, and he put together an incredible presentation about being prepared for climate change. And he said he gave us very real and practical immediate solutions that you could take now to prepare yourself and your home and your family for the next 30 years. And he said that it's the economy and it's not the climate that's going to be the canary in the coal mine.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the economy that's going to tank because mm-hmm. of climate change that we are not addressing, that we are not dealing with. I mean, neither party is really doing that. But, Blake Davis was on the show last February talking about the plant, and it was a fabulous conversation. He's a smart dude.
Yeah.
He really is.
Brilliant. And I'm so thrilled to have been there.
Well, I'm so glad that...
So please, if we can get him back, that would be a fascinating conversation to have with him.
And today's the last day of Bioneer, so I imagine you could run down there to UIC and drop in.
And if I may say, Mike, Jennifer Murdoff of Home to Roost
She's got a little chicken consulting business. She's going to be presenting this afternoon along with LaManda Joy, who's a University of Illinois Chicago Master Gardener.
Well, LaManda Joy is from the Peterson Garden Project.
Yep, and I'm wearing her shirt today.
The yes,
Peterson
you are.
Garden Project in support of LaManda. So I will see you later this afternoon.
Oh, you get to go back. I got to go do theater later on. I'm stuck doing non-political, non-environmental things. Yeah, but it's what I do. All right. Stand by. When we get back, Mary T. McClellan from Glacier Oaks Native Plant Nursery will be with us. We're going to talk about living Christmas trees, maybe an alternative to what you had in mind for your holiday this year. But I got to ask the questions. Are your extremities a little tingly, palms sweaty, feeling a little woozy? Yep, we must be closing in on the holiday season. And if you have friends who are gardeners, I have a way to alleviate your symptoms. Get them a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. In fact, ladies, I have copies for you, your very own. I left the bag in the other room.
New edition?
Woohoo. Of the November-December issue. It's out. And as usual, it's packed full of great articles and information. You say you love native trees, but you want more than good looks? You want nuts? Seriously, there's a story about the best hazelnuts, bitternuts, black walnuts, and other natives that will provide you with some protein as well as beauty. And while I'm on the subject of holiday gifts, how about making some of your own, like herbal balm, sugar scrub? I don't even know what that is. Handmade soap and more. There's a story about that, too. And, of course, there's my annual evisceration of your favorite Christmas carols. Looks like I'm getting coal in my stocking again this year. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Chicago, get ready to experience an environmental event like no other. This November 2nd through the 4th, Great Lakes Bioneers will host its first annual gathering at the UIC Student Center East. For three exciting days, local activists and leaders will be joined by visionaries like Vandana Shiva, Starhawk, and Richard Heinberg in a program of presentations and interactive workshops energized with music, drama, dance, poetry, and celebration. Visit ChicagoBioneers.org for more info and to register. That's ChicagoBioneers.org.
See, I told you they were doing their thing today. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Extended periods of extreme heat can weaken trees and make them more susceptible to infestations. Helping your trees begin to recover from the hot conditions as they head into winter is important to protecting their long-term health and helping them to be less susceptible to storms. Unless your trees received adequate water, they may be more susceptible to pests and diseases and may be more vulnerable to the harsh winter conditions as a result of the summer weather. Even if you watered your trees, they may still be lacking moisture. If so, a watering program can help. Like I say, get that drip hose out there till the ground is frozen. Mulching, fertilizing, and other soil care activities can help create the optimal growing conditions for your trees. I mean that in general, not necessarily fertilizing now. And pruning out any dead wood can help prevent storm damage in winter. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Got a shout out here from one of our tweeters, and that is Delta Garden, who says, listening to Mike Now Show here in BC. I assume it's British Columbia, not Boston College. So there you go. Thank you for the shout out. And somebody just retweeted the link I put that you will see on my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show. A story by Business Week called It's Global Warming, Stupid. Business Week is saying that. Hello? All right. Let's go to line two. Mary T. McClellan, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
It's great to have you again on the program. It's been a long, long time. Mary T. is a propagator out at Glacier Oaks Native Plant Nursery. Explain to people exactly where you are and what you do.
Well, we're northwest of Chicago, right almost at the Wisconsin line, a little bit northwest of Harvard. And we propagate, grow and plant the native species, but especially the Keystone Oaks. And we got involved with the Land Conservancy of McHenry County, which, as you might know, is an outstanding resource for the private landowner who they help preserve and restore any landowner who wants to do that with their land. And the oaks are a really big part of that. So we've been growing those and donating them back to the project. And since the Land Conservancy doesn't get any tax dollars at all, they have funding only from members or grants and fundraising activities, we came up with this great idea that we would take some of the evergreens that people are using for Christmas trees and holiday trees anyway and see if we could promote the living as opposed to the live cut and artificial.
And I think that's a great idea. The question I have for you, and by the way, I should mention that I've got all the links on my website at MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show if you're interested in this. I got the newsletter from the Land Conservancy of McHenry County that talked about you doing this, and I thought, wow, what a great idea. Now, here's the problem. You're donating 25% of sales, right, to the Land
Conservancy? That's right. Yeah.
That's a huge chunk of change to donate.
Well, it makes a difference, yes.
Well, congratulations to you for doing that. Now, the question at hand, though, is, all right, what kind of trees are you advocating people have as Christmas trees in their homes, and how do they take care of them? I mean, that's the important thing, because a lot of folks are going to say, I can't even keep a peace lily alive, let alone a tree, until the spring when I'm going to get it in the ground. So what do you tell them?
Right. Well, Mike, you're right about the trees are a critical part of this working. These evergreens they're native to North America. Two of the species that we're recommending are native to this general Midwestern area. And they've been transplanted 3 times during their life here at the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got roots close into the center of the root ball, more of the feeder roots. And they've also been grown in the McHenry County clay loam soil, which has great water retention and is very supportive structure for the growing roots. And these two factors, plus the care that they'll receive during the holiday and after planting, that's what will make this holiday tree possibility. And so it's kind of a spectrum of care and greenness and benefit. I see the artificial versus the live cut versus the living tree. A little more work, a lot more benefit.
Yeah, because it's not just, cutting the tree and throwing it on the top of the car. And then when you're done, you hope people at least who have live trees don't just throw it out in the alley, but they actually get it mulched up. And
right.
Most municipalities do that now. In fact, it's a crime if you just throw it in the alley. That's just crazy. But more and more, I would imagine people were thinking, well, how can I be even more carbon friendly, neutral, whatever. And now the trees that you said are natives are your are the white pines and the white cedars.
Right.
And how big are, and I should tell you that the other ones that you have available are blue and green spruce.
Right. Right.
And
right.
Are those the four that people can pick up, or is there something else as well?
Yeah, those are the ones we're sticking to that seem to do well in this area. And we're moving them at a size that's really handleable for a gardener.
Uh-huh.
They fit in, we had one in the back of our Prius. And we lay down the seat, we tie up the branches, they're in a pot, so they're easy to handle. And the burlap ball of soil has handles on it, so they're easy to lift out when you're ready to plant.
So now that's the question I have too. You say in a pot, but are they also balled and burlapped and in a pot?
Yes, they're in a treated burlap, which will last for about 6 months, so it's not going to fall apart while you're waiting to plant it. Let's say you don't want to plant it till next spring. And it will allow water as you put the water over the top. It soaks in, and so it keeps it a nice, handleable package until you're ready to plant it.
Mm-hmm. Then you take it into the house. How often do you have to water it, and what do you advise people to do? Because it's in a bald and burlap container. Now, the pot, I assume the pot itself has holes in it. It's not watertight.
Right. You'll have to put a tray under it, like you would any plant you have indoors, and you keep 1 or 2 inches of water in the bottom of that, and then maybe the first time you bring it in, pour some over the top. It doesn't have to sit in a full container of water like a cut tree does, but it has to be moist. And the one thing I'll mention is that along with this, when you pick up your tree, will be a very nice little booklet about exactly what to do step by step. And it's, if you follow the directions, it would be easy for anyone, even a non-gardener. And the main thing I think with a living tree is that you have to compromise a little bit on how long you're going to have it in the house, because you don't want it to start growing.
Right. It might break dormancy, right?
Right. So there's some tricks to fool the tree a little bit, where you keep it outside or you kind of stage it, phase it into your house by keeping it in an unheated garage or even outside in a protected area. Obviously, ours stay outside all winter, and they're fine. And then when you start moving it in, find a spot that is away from heaters or stoves or fireplaces, and move it in just a few days before Christmas. The average, depending on how cool you keep your house, the average length of time you'd want to have a living tree in is about 5 to 7 days. And then you want it in kind of an indirect light area, but not in direct sun. And the watering, let's see. One of the things I was going to mention about watering that's one of those little innovative ideas is you can put crushed ice on top of the ball, and it slowly melts and keeps the soil ball moist in this warmer environment. And
it also keeps it cooler.
Yes, yeah. And if you turn your thermostat down at night, which I think probably a lot of people do, that helps. And I've also heard of a tip. It's amazing how many people have actually done this. Once we started talking about it, I had somebody tell me yesterday, if you have a little humidifier, you can put that beside the tree and that helps it. Or you can, if you don't use electric lights, you can mist it. They used to do that, you know, in the old country. They'd bring in the live tree and keep the needles moist by misting it. So those are just a few tips that you can keep it, you know, moist in the house.
Uh-huh. We're talking to Mary T. McClellan from Glacier Oaks Nursery in Harvard. Let's get now to the point where you've had it in the house, you've been really good about, and again, I think the point is well taken, you keep the root ball moist, but it doesn't have to be soaking. It's just, and the other thing you could probably do, if people are worried about the pot, is you could take it out of the pot that you provide and put it in your own if you need something a little more decorative, I would assume.
Absolutely, yeah. You can even leave it in this one and just slide it in like a sleeve.
Yeah.
In another one. And that's easily done. Yeah. And actually, a lot of the garden centers I've seen with their Christmas decorations have some beautiful pots.
Mm-hmm. And then this is the crucial part where people freak out. They get it out of the house and they think, okay, now I'm going to kill it. And you're saying that you can put it in the garage, in an unheated garage, because that's warm enough for it not to get blasted by the winter winds and cold, right?
Right. If you think about how they are in nature, you know, they freeze. The ground freezes, but it happens over a period of time. And then you want it to stay that way once it happens. So that's how an unheated garage may stay a certain cold temperature that's going to hold it in dormancy. And even outside or inside, you'd want to kind of protect the root ball a little bit. Outside, you could use mulch. Inside, you could put something else around the pot just to protect so that it doesn't go through that freeze-thaw freezing cycle, because the roots are a little bit more, you know, susceptible to that than the tops are. And once you've got it phased out, you can either leave it in your garage like that or outside healed in, or you can, let's say we have a very mild December, you might even want to go ahead and plant it, and then you would do the same planting procedure that you would in the spring, and just make sure to water it in well and mulch, and we'll have those directions along with trees also.
A couple of things I want to point out, just so people understand. When you say, and I'm glad you mentioned that, if we have a winter like we had last year, yeah, you could plant that puppy. You could get that thing in the ground, dig it in, and that would be absolutely the best thing for it, I would imagine.
Yes, it would.
And when you say heal in, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, let's say you find a place outside near your garage that's not real windy, and you want to hold it there until you're going to plant in the spring. So you're going to do a celebration or a memorial tree in the spring, and you want to save it. You can get mulch. Pine needles save all the leaves that you rake up this fall, and pack it around the soil ball. You can leave it in the pot or you can take it out and just really snug it in up against a wall or someplace. And that will protect the roots so that as the temperature drops, they will slowly freeze and stay frozen. And you can also keep watering it until it freezes. I liked what you said with the care of trees message, because that's really what people should be doing. If we don't have very much snow and it does, the ground doesn't freeze, we need to be watering the plants we care about right up until freezing.
Yeah, you know, my I say it over and over again on this show, and people are probably tired of hearing it, but my advice is if you're putting the turkey in on Christmas Day and the ground is still not frozen, well, while the turkey's cooking, go out and put the drip hose on the trees
that
really need it. All right. Now, the other thing that you need to warn people about when they're using that, they can't, and some people will get faked out. Believe me, they will think that it's going to remain that size when they take it outside.
Right.
You can see where I'm going with this, can't you, Mary?
Yes. We're recommending, you know, before you do this, have your site selection committee in the family go out and look about where you're going to put it, because you're going to need at least 10 or 15 feet wide, and maybe, well, most people don't have a problem with the height, but you wouldn't want to put it under a power line or something.
Well, but see, that's, they do have a problem with the height. I know what you're talking about. The width,
yeah.
The width is always a problem because people put it right outside the door and then they can't open their front door,
right.
In 5 years. But really, when you're planting, you need to look up, you need to look down.
Right.
You got to make sure there's nothing in the ground underneath the soil line that's going to cause a problem.
Right. They should know where their lines are coming into the house.
But you also really need to look up and see where the power lines are there.
Right.
There's nothing uglier than a tree that's been hacked because it is growing into a power line.
So true.
And we do it all the time. I don't know why we don't have underground power lines all over the country. You know, someday when we have the power, you know, they're coming up with this, and I know you probably know about this, Lisa, where you won't even have to plug anything into a socket in the wall. It will just, you'll have a device that just sends the electricity through the air to your devices. And then we will look upon the 20th century as like the Stone Age, with all the power lines running right across the country. So look at that and know how big will a white pine and a white cedar get?
Well, the cedar's smaller, but you could plan on the white pine are going to be, you know, they could be 25 feet. Mm-hmm. It depends on if they're not in an absolutely perfect condition, they'll be much smaller than what their mature height would be. White pines, I suppose, in the perfect setting could get up to 100 feet or at least 75 feet.
You understand that what happens when you plant things in an urban setting, in a suburban setting, there are limiting factors. It's not as easy for these trees as it is in a forest. They don't usually reach their ultimate height, although they could. See, you need to know that.
If you back off on that and say maybe half or a third as big, you're still looking at possibly 50 feet.
Yeah. Well,
30 feet.
Yeah, so that's something to take into consideration when you buy these, and especially when you put them outside. And
right. It's going to take quite a few years to get there.
Yes, it will. Sarah?
Mary, are there any dwarf varieties that would be suitable for a urban environment of these white pine, white cedar that you recommend?
There would be cultivars, yes, of the white pine. I think there are dwarf white pine, and there are certainly dwarf cedars. Holmstrup would be one of them, and a lot of, all of the cedars are going to be smaller. So I know, there's a little spruce that's an ornamental one that's often used. We don't grow it in the nursery. I can't think of the name, but there are some, yes, that you could probably find at a local garden center. The main thing to think about if you want to use something that's dwarf or not grown around here is what kind of soil it's in.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to think of pH. You got to think of drainage. And that's important to know for folks who are planting things. Know that around the Chicago area, mostly we have clayey, alkaline soil. So if you're finding a tree and it says needs perfect drainage and acidic conditions, you might want to stop and consider whether you want that tree.
Right.
All right, Mary T. McClellan, I'm so glad you're doing this. You've set the record straight for me. You know, you don't get to have it in your house quite as long as you would a cut tree. But this is a good way to contribute to the Land Conservancy of McHenry County. 25% of what Mary is selling will go to them. So you folks up in McHenry, run up there. And, you know, even folks here in Chicago, this would be your Christmas tree run. If you're going out to a Christmas tree farm or something, go up to Glacier Oaks instead and have a little trip up there with the family, buy a live tree, figure out, you know, it could be a family project. Let's keep the tree alive. Let's bring the temperature down in our house from 80 degrees to 60, you know, just so that
you can place your orders online at the Land Conservancy website, and you can pick up. They have two pickup days, a Friday, Saturday in November, which is fairly early, and you'd have to keep it outside at your house, or they'll be flexible and they'll let you pick up later too. If you can't come right then.
Yeah, and that's November 16th and 17th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Land Conservancy office in Woodstock. I have a map. I have the links. I have the link to Land Conservancy in Glacier Oaks. It's all there on my website. Go to Mike Novak, this week's show. Mary, thank you so much. It's great talking to you again, and I hope that the sale goes very, very well.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity. And I just want to remind people, you probably will pay about what you'd pay for a live cut tree for the living tree, but you get to plant it in your yard and watch it grow.
That's a really good point. And the kids
love it.
Will love it and watch it grow for years and years.
Plus, you're also providing habitat for wildlife. I mean, it really is the gift that keeps on giving.
You could even date your trees so that you remember that. Oh, that was that Christmas.
You could even name your tree.
You could name your tree.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, start a new holiday right. tradition.
Good point, Mary. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great
Sunday.
You too.
Bye-bye. Rick DeMaio weather coming up in 90 seconds.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
I can't think of a more appropriate intro for Rick DeMaio than that song. You remember that song from Spirit, don't you, Rick?
aren't you supposed to say, no, I don't remember it?
Oh, yeah. You know, I heard that that song was recorded a really, really, really long time ago. And
yeah.
It's a cool song, yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool song. You know what? But, Mike, I still go back to, I don't know if we talked about this last week, but fast forward, what would have happened if that storm would have hit tomorrow? What would have that done to our presidential election?
Yeah. They'd have had to postpone it for, who knows how long.
Yeah, and, you know, then the question becomes, you know, what type of, legal, loopholes and hurdles do you have to jump through or jump over to do something like that? And, you know, you would probably get, some people on one side saying, yeah, but this is favoring you guys, and the other side saying, well, maybe this is favoring you guys. But it's amazing how the winds of a hurricane can actually bring two politicians together, being, Obama and Christie there on the shores of ravaged New Jersey during the week.
Yeah, that was amazing. And I want to give you credit, too, because, first of all, thank you for the extra time you put on the show last week.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
And I think I'd be surprised if a lot of people didn't begin to realize how serious the storm was after hearing you talk about it right here.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the time to do that, because right off the bat, I think this was clearly a potentially catastrophic event, much, much worse than Irene, gave the East Coast, or at least the shoreline areas. You remember me ranting and raving last year about how they overdid it. And then I was talking to my brother who lives in Brooklyn, who lives basically two blocks from the East River, saying that there was a lot of people who didn't take the storm seriously because of what had occurred last year with Irene. They were forced to evacuate. Nothing happened. And this is what occurs so many times, is you cry wolf the first time, you cry wolf the second time. People go, well, it wasn't that bad. Why should I go?
Mm-hmm.
And clearly a lot of people needed to go. But And it's amazing, Mike, how, you know, we've been through, it seems like, 2 years of this race for president between two men, yet it could end up being decided by, you know, a woman named Sandy.
Something like that.
And then, oddly enough, here it is. You know, my brother I have three brothers who live in the area, in the New York area. My sister lives on Long Island. And he's like, my brother lives in New Jersey about, you know, 4 miles inland from the ocean. He says, you know, if they're going to give hurricanes a name, they got to make sure that the ones that hit the beaches, they don't call them Sandy. And I didn't think about it until 2 days later. I'm like, wow, that's so weird, you know. And then it's, you know, here it is, Bruce Springsteen and John Bon Jovi, you know, doing this benefit, you know, Friday night for NBC. And you were hoping that Bruce wasn't going to be singing, you know, Greetings from Asbury Park, which the song is all about Sandy. You know, mm-hmm. So the storm just had a lot of irony to it. In addition to the fact that it was the, you know, the most intense and deepest low pressure system ever to strike the East Coast, you know, by far outdoing the 1938 hurricane. When it came on shore there just south of Atlantic City, not only did it, you know, produce a direct hit to the, you know, the northern half of the New Jersey shoreline, obviously Staten Island and also Lower Manhattan, but it also happened during the full moon astronomical tide. So you couldn't have had a more perfect scenario for 70 to 80 mile per hour winds pushing water into an area that becomes, you know, highly focused. And at the same time that, you know, we kept hearing about this 13.5-foot surge, but the tide itself rose the water 4 feet. The meteorological effects were only about 9 feet, but the astronomical effects were actually 4.5 feet. And high tides will always be more focused in narrow corridors of inlets as opposed to the wide open, you know, shorelines of the ocean. Something that here in the Midwest we're not, you know, too privy to, because obviously there's no tidal surges or tides of any sort on Lake Michigan, although we do see water rising and falling, obviously, with the wind. But, Mike, this couldn't have been a more perfect setup. And I think the most telling thing is when you see where the water ended up in areas of lower Manhattan, it was exactly what Al Gore told us, an inconvenient truth. And I have to say, I tip my hand to him, even though I've never doubted, you know, the consequences of climate change and climate variability and, of course, global warming. I always like to put that last. But he warned us, and he was right. He really was right.
Well, that says something about the 2000 election, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, the thing about it is, I think you can agree with me, and Lisa can as well, is Gore was a great senator and a fantastic vice president. He probably wouldn't have made a good president because, you know what? He cared too much about the things that affect the common person. And I seriously believe that, because you mentioned earlier about how, you know, climate change has not been brought up at all during the campaign. I don't know if you watched, but Tuesday night, you know, David Letterman had Jim Cantore on. And I have to say, brilliant television. Both Monday and Tuesday night were in studios with no people. So he basically had to do the, you know, it was almost like you were talking to your stagehands. But he had Cantore on from the Weather Channel, and he said, so Ed Letterman's a very, very astute person. He's got a lot of knowledge up his sleeves, even though he pretends to be somewhat of a goof at times. But he said, how does climate change figure into this? And you can see Cantore kind of sat back and said, I knew we were going to get to this question. And I actually bumped into Jim up at a conference up in Madison not too long ago. We chatted for a little bit. And he's definitely on that side. He said, you know what, Dave, I think it had a lot to do with it, and it's a shame that we're not talking about it, but it's definitely there. And then I think Wednesday night he had Katie Couric on, and he said, Katie, you know, 4.5 hours of debates, and we haven't heard anything about climate change. Why? And she goes, you know what, that's a good question. And she obviously didn't have an answer, but it begs the question. It really does. Why?
Well, it's just a massive failure by, as I said earlier, by the corporate media, because they, and by the way, media is plural, and everybody should know that. They have a range of about 3 questions that they ask, and then they,
right.
You know, and everything else is not even in the room.
Right.
And I don't get that. It's the, uh-huh. Yes, Lisa?
helps. I was going to say, too, that I think not only is it a failure by some folks in the media, I think it's a complete success by the people who have been trying to push the denial issues.
Yeah, good point.
We need to, you know, we need to stand up and say, no, wait, we're not listening to you guys. I mean, those are the same folks who pushed that cigarettes don't cause cancer.
Those are the exact same people.
So
yeah,
you make a great
point, Lisa. And part of that is because I think we set the table for them to make it too easy, because I think back in the late 90s and early 2000s, we were going, I think, bonkers with this. And I kept trying to tell people, slow down. Not everything is related to climate change. We're not going to have, you know, tropical plants grown in our backyard by the year 2030. Slow down. So I think we made it easy for them. But at the same time, not only do I think it is, and as much as I support the current candidate, I think it's a failure on his part not to address it. I don't think he could, Mike, because he sees this election as so close that any time you bring something up where the other side could attack you, he knew he would lose on this. So I think he's kind of waiting in the weeds, just like Romney flip-flopped from being an ultra-conservative 2 months ago to now being somewhat moderate and being somewhat, you know what, I'm more like you guys. So I think the candidates, because it's so close, are basically doing whatever they can to basically win the game at this point.
And the Newsweek article suggested that too. Or Business Week.
The Business Week article, and that's definitely the case. We've only got a couple of minutes here, Rick. But I just want to know, your brother, you say he's 4 miles inland. What was it like at his place?
You know what? He's 4 miles inland, but his son is 6 blocks inland. Okay, 6 blocks. They didn't evacuate, but they had about 2 to 3 feet of water. In the street, about a block down, they had about 2 to 3 feet of sand. My other brother, who lives about 2 miles inland from Great South Bay, the boardwalk at Far Rockaway is completely destroyed. He just got power this morning. My parents up in the Poconos in northeast Pennsylvania, they were without power. Basically, my entire family was out without power, and I was calling everybody to let everybody know how the other people were doing that they couldn't get in touch with. So it was kind of an interesting scenario.
I bet. Interesting week. Okay, so what about us in the Midwest?
Yeah, the bell is on. Cool today. It looks like weather basically the next couple of days, generally what we've seen over the last 2 days. And the great news, Mike, coast to coast for Election Day, nothing in the way of any extreme weather. So I think whoever has a chance to go out and vote. I got to vote on Tuesday. 3 hour wait.
Oh my goodness.
A 3 hour wait up in Rogers Park. I said, I'll see you at 6 a.m. when the polls open on Tuesday morning. So,
my goodness.
Yeah, Horner Park was the same.
Okay.
That tells you a lot, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah, it does. So, and then pretty much the same for the rest of the week. What's going on?
You know what? We'll begin to warm up by, we get to Wednesday, Thursday, maybe temperatures in the 60s. And I think by the time we're talking this time next week, we're going to be talking how warm it was over the last 2 weeks. So we're going to get into a nice mild spell and hopefully some rain as well, Mike.
All right, fabulous. Thanks, Rick DeMille. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Mike.
And politics, next hour, the Mike Novak Show.
Of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Santa, I can't sleep at night. Once I ran to you, now I'll run from you.
Yeah, I was thinking what we could. There's always a connection with every song that goes into a segment. And especially when everybody in the room is dancing. But this one, of course, is our relationship to our politicians, Tainted Love. It's it just totally makes sense. Second hour of the Mike Novak Show. If you want to join in the conversation at some point, and we're going to be talking politics and the environment, the election and the environment, 773-763-9278. That number again, 773-763-9278. Let's go right to the phone and
bring in Jeff Goringer, who's the National Press Secretary for the League of Conservation Voters. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure having you on. You're in D.C., right?
I am, yes.
Okay. Are you there this morning? Are you, like, in the area?
I am, yeah. I'm out in D.C. and still getting pummeled with all the advertising out here on the airwaves from Virginia as well. So.
Oh, my goodness. That's true. See, here, well, we get pummeled, too, in Illinois, but it's the local elections. We haven't seen, there's very few of the presidential commercials here, but, you know, I can imagine what it's like in those states. It's my favorite clip of the week was that poor little girl in Colorado.
Bronc Obama.
Bronc Obama, who was just crying and crying. Because
I saw that. She
just wanted to be over.
I saw some Romney ads last night on Saturday Night Live. I had not seen them.
Really?
Okay. Last night, Chicago.
They're appealing to the younger crowd there, huh?
Apparently.
Yeah. That's Lisa Albrecht, by the way, and Sarah Batka is in the studio as well. Denny Sheeter spinning the dials over there and answering the phones for us. And again, if you want to call, 773-763-9278. Jeff, why don't we start there with the national election, which you're getting pummeled by out of Virginia. We've mentioned it all day. We've touched on this all day. I've got it on my website, mikenovak.net. I've got some links to stories about it, meaning the lack of conversation about the environment in general. I mean, no talk of global warming. Sandy finally put it on the map. It put it in on the radar for these people. But is it too late for that to really have an effect? Jeff, do you think?
Well, I think we're seeing a convergence of a lot of different things in the closing days of this election that's sort of putting climate change into the dialogue of this campaign in a way in which it hasn't been, and certainly in the last couple of months. Mayor Bloomberg coming out endorsing the president for reelection, talking about climate change and his efforts in the wake of Sandy has sort of raised that dialogue, certainly the storm itself. I will say, too, that here at LCV, our last ad that we're going to put up on the air on cable on Monday is actually on climate change in the presidential race, highlighting the clear contrast that exists between President Obama and Governor Romney. So we're certainly doing all we can to raise the topic and make it part of the campaign, because it is really the challenge of our generation.
Yeah, and of course, Jeff is with the League of Conservation Voters, and the idea of the conservation voters is to get people thinking in that direction. And if you go to their website, lcv.org, you can find information about your own state, whether, and I've got people all over the country listening to this show, but mainly in Illinois and Wisconsin and Indiana. And I find it interesting, we'll get to the local things in just a second. How would you describe the difference right now between Mr. Obama and Mr. Romney in terms of what they would do in terms of our environment?
Sure. Well, this is a race in which we have maybe the clearest contrast that we've seen in a very long time. Governor Romney is in some ways even more extreme than President Bush, George W. Bush, was in some of his views on energy issues. Governor Romney would end tax incentives for wind energy, which is helping, our nation get more of our energy from wind, particularly out there in a lot of swing states, Colorado, and certainly parts are made in Ohio as well. So that there's a clear contrast there, who will invest in clean energy like wind, solar as well. Even on climate change, if Governor Romney is successful on Tuesday, he would actually be the first president we've had to reject the scientific consensus surrounding climate change. So it's really hard to see with the governor how we get him to address a problem that he doesn't even admit exists. In fact, as our ad I was telling you about on climate change makes clear, he's even said he's not in this race to heal the planet. So there's a very real contrast between that and President Obama, who has made huge investments in the clean energy sector, who's helping us address the root causes of climate change and wants to put us on a course to do more.
And yet, Jeff, what makes people nervous about President Obama is when he gets out there and he talks about clean coal, and then when he talks about how natural gas is going to drive the energy of this country for the 100 years and that sort of thing. It's not enough to make me vote the other way, but it does not make me particularly happy. Is that something that you're finding as well?
Look at these two candidates and the direction that they would take us in terms of energy and clean energy. The choice is clear. The contrast is there, and there's such a big difference that I think when folks who are concerned about energy or climate, they go to the polls, they're not going to have concerns over which of the two candidates is better to put our nation, in charge of our own energy future, so we're not relying on, unstable Middle Eastern countries for our energy.
It's interesting, though, in anticipation of this show, I was doing a little research, and if you go to Green Party candidate Jill Stein's website, she's just unequivocal. She says she'll shut all oil, coal, and nuclear plants by 2025. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, even if by some miracle Jill Stein got elected president, and yet she does stand up to the fossil fuel industry, and it makes me wonder how we get that argument going. How do we get through the silence of talking about the environment and climate change? And it's interesting, my meteorologist, just before he came out, before the top of the hour, said he felt like Obama is kind of waiting in the weeds and that he's going to take a stronger position in his last 4 years than his first four when it comes to clean energy. My feeling is, he's been a moderate. He's going to continue to be a moderate. That we know what we're getting. I mean, that's the good news, is that you look at Obama and you say, okay, the guy is who he is. He's not a shapeshifter like Governor Romney. But how do you press forward to get this this dialogue going about climate change in the next 4 years?
President has done. He's made remarkable progress in investing in clean energy that are creating thousands of clean energy jobs. The Recovery Act has made some of the single largest investment in our nation's history in clean energy. The president has issued new rules doubling fuel efficiency standards, so consumers are out there going further on a gallon of gas and saving money at the pump. We've doubled our use of energy from wind and solar power just since the president took office in 2008. That's a remarkable statistic, and we have more work to do to continue to build on our achievements there in the first term, and he will continue to do that in the second. But the contrast is, Governor Romney's position in not supporting clean energy is, really a slap in the face to the 3 million people who work in the green energy sector all across the country. So the president's done a lot, and our commitment is to reelect him and give him a Congress that he can work with so we can continue to move forward on this.
Jeff, I would agree with you completely, but I think we also need to encourage people that I think this movement's going to have to happen locally. We need to look at our municipalities and what are their stances. We need to look at our states, and then we need to also look at the nation.
Well, no doubt that people should look up and down the ballot and take a look at the candidates that will support clean energy, that will get us off of, the sort of energies of the past and toward the clean energies of the future. And, we're certainly encouraging people to do that. We have a lot of obviously congressional races. We have a presidential election. There's a lot of local initiatives that really give people an opportunity to have their voices heard and really decide sort of what direction we go in for the future in terms of our energy sources.
And that takes us right into the issues, the local issues. And on your website also, you have endorsed a number of candidates locally. Tammy Baldwin, who's running for senator in Wisconsin, and then, of course, in Illinois, Tammy Duckworth in the 8th District, David Gill in the 13th. Let's see here, Brad Schneider in the 10th. What I find kind of interesting is the Tammy Duckworth endorsement, because the guy she's running against, Joe Walsh, who there's no other way to say it, he's despicable. There's he's just he needs to be booted out of office as fast as we can possibly do it. And you have a thing called the Dirty Dozen. Explain what the Dirty Dozen is and where Joe Walsh fits into that, would you?
Sure. Well, we have the Dirty Dozen program, which is a program that we have started to highlight those candidates for office that are really in the pocket of big oil and of corporate interests, and those folks that we really need to, frankly, vote out of office. We also have something called the Flat Earth 5 campaign that Joe Walsh is on. That's a new program that we started this election cycle to defeat 5 climate change deniers in the House of Representatives and really send a message that you shouldn't be a member of Congress if you can't acknowledge basic scientific facts. So Joe Walsh is part of those, part of the program. The Flat Earth 5 program, you know, he is called the science behind man-made climate change. You know, he said it's, quote, not there yet, and that, you know, quote, man's potential role in global warming has not been definitively determined, end quote. And that's despite all the science that's out there. You know, and I'll say the science on climate change is as clear as it, you know, any public policy question will ever get. So we really need someone in there to defend our air, our water, that will stand up and defend our climate. Not a guy like Joe Walsh, who said that the EPA is, quote, destroying the country and ought to be scrapped.
Yeah, and then there are those of us who think the EPA doesn't go far enough. So there's quite a disconnect there. And it's amazing that he's made both of your lists. He's got the Dirty Dozen and the Flat Earth 5. Woohoo! Let's give Joe Walsh a bell.
Yeah, you know, his record is really abysmal. He has just a 3% score on our national environmental scorecard, and that's a nonpartisan sort of nationally accepted list on where members of Congress stand on clean energy issues. So he does have a really atrocious record, and the people of that district have a really clear choice in November on what direction they want to take our country.
I know that a lot of Wisconsinites are following the race between Tommy Thompson and Tammy Baldwin, and you've endorsed Tammy Baldwin. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what she would bring to the table.
Sure. Well, Tammy Baldwin has worked with the president on a lot of important initiatives in the House. She has a very clear, strong record in the House. She has been working with the president on things like the Recovery Act, as I mentioned earlier, that created thousands of clean energy jobs. She has supported increasing fuel efficiency standards since way back in 2005, if not earlier. And President Obama has, like I said, worked to double mileage standards in this country. We've doubled our use of wind and solar thanks to Tammy Baldwin working with President Obama. You know, Tammy Baldwin has a 97% score on our national environmental scorecard. She has stood up to big oil, wants to end their subsidies and the billions of taxpayer dollars that we give oil companies every year, despite the fact they're some of the most profitable companies on the face of the planet. And she wants to end tax breaks for shipping jobs overseas. So she really is representational of the kind of senator that we need there in Wisconsin that'll work with the president and continue building on the success that we've seen.
And some of the other races in Illinois, again, I mentioned earlier, we've got David Gill in the 13th, who you are supporting, and Brad Schneider. Do you have anything you'd like to add about those candidates?
Yes, I mean, David Gill, a former ER doctor and a physician, he would defend the EPA's ability to protect public health and fight for the provisions in the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act that have been under assault in the current House of Representatives. It's been the worst House of Representatives that we ever have had on environmental issues. And David Gill would be there on the right side, defending clean air, defending clean water, and you know, tax incentives for clean energy programs, and supporting energy efficiency measures, and ending the tax breaks for big oil. So it's a really clear choice in that race as well. You mentioned Brad Schneider as well. Brad is really the kind of environmental advocate that we need in Congress. He has a long history of standing up for environmental causes and our conservationist values, unlike his opponent, Congressman Dold, who has been on the wrong side of so many issues. He's Dold has really succumbed from pressure from the Tea Party when it came to slashing funding for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. So a very clear choice in that election as well. Dold has just a 34% on our scorecard. So his votes really speak for themselves, and we hope voters take a different approach in that district and elect Brad Schneider.
You know, it's interesting that Dold has a 34% scorecard from the LCV. His predecessor was Mark Kirk, now our senator. His mark was 64%.
That's right.
But the pressure, you know, it has increased on Republican legislators over the last few years by the Tea Party to abandon science, basically. I guess that leads me to a question. Are there very many Republicans on your recommended list? Because I try not to get to the point where I'm saying all Republicans are going to vote against the environment and all Democrats are going to vote for it. But more and more, that seems to be the case.
Well, you know, we're really a bipartisan organization. We have endorsed Republicans and Democrats this cycle. No doubt about it that it's getting more and more difficult to look at Republicans that are standing up for clean air, that are standing up for clean water. Happy to endorse and stand with them when they're there in Congress fighting for provision that the American public wants to see in supporting clean energy. But no doubt, I mean, I mentioned earlier, this is the worst House of Representatives ever on environmental issues. They've taken hundreds and hundreds of votes on really bad pieces of environmental legislation that roll back safeguards protecting clean water, that roll back safeguards protecting clean air. So it's one of those things where we believe this election is so important because we have a chance to really go in a different direction and elect members of Congress that are committed to standing up for the EPA's ability to do its job and letting scientists protect the air we breathe and the water we drink and you know, standing up to corporate polluters, standing up to big oil, ending their tax breaks. So, you know, there's a lot on the line in November. There's no doubt about it.
Before I let you go, Jeff Goringer, who's from the League of Conservation Voters, I got a tweet here from someone who wants to know if you have any sense about the percentage of the electorate for whom environmental and scientific issues drive their vote.
I think that these issues may not get enough focus in the media, but I think when people go to the polls, it really is on their mind because, you know, they're seeing the effects of climate change, for example, right outside their window in a way in which they haven't in a very long time, you know, whether it's extreme temperature shifts or droughts or wildfires. Even, you know, we've seen in the last couple of days with something like Sandy, the impacts of climate change are really hitting home for people. And I think when we're talking about even something like how do we balance the budget, how do we address our fiscal concerns, you know, sending big oil, $4 billion of our tax dollars every year, despite the fact these are some of the most profitable companies on the face of the planet, you know, I think that does weigh on people when they go to the polls. With so much at stake, I think that they want to allow scientists to do their job, protecting our air, protecting our water. They want to address climate change. It's not even a partisan issue. You know, these type of topics transcend party lines, and I think that they just ring true for people just as a common sense measure and things to do, you know, protecting our air, protecting our water, things like that. So I think when people go to the polls in just a couple of days, they're going to have these topics on their minds, and then they're going to vote for candidates that are committed to being on the right side of these issues.
Jeff Goringer, National Press Secretary for the League of Conservation Voters, thank you so much for stopping by this morning. I really appreciate it. You know, I'm trying to, if there are undecided voters out there, I don't know who they are, and I can't imagine why they're still undecided. But if they believe in the health of our planet, maybe we can nudge them in the direction of voting for candidates who are going to protect that.
Absolutely, and I would encourage them to go to lcv.org and look at our National Environmental Scorecard. It's a great thing that will break down where their member of Congress has stood over the years on a lot of very important issues, from protecting the EPA and oil issues and energy issues and clean energy issues. And it really would let them know sort of where their member of Congress has voted, and it will help inform them, you know, before they go to the polls, just what's at stake.
Right. And you can do that by going to my website, MikeNovak.net, and go to this week's show, and I've got the link there. Or you can just go to lcv.org/scorecard. And then what you do is you just select your state and click on it and go, and it will bring up the scorecard and their ranking from the LCV, and I hope it helps you make your vote. Jeff, thank you so much, and I hope that we speak again in the future.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Have a good Sunday. Bye. Sure. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. I want to mention also that if you go to my website, another organization that has ranked candidates, you know, and a lot of it's interesting. A lot of the environmental groups can't really do this because it's not in their mission, and they're 501c3s, and you're not allowed to do advocacy. So if you do a 501c4, you can do more of that. And a lot of folks in that realm want to stay away from these endorsements. But the other one is the Sierra Club, which has a voter guide, and I've got the link there. And they have covered a number of the issues in the districts. They have an endorsement for, obviously, for Barack Obama as president. And then in Illinois, they go through a number of the districts. Some are not too controversial, but again, like District 8 with Tammy Duckworth versus Joe Walsh. Of course, they endorse Tammy Duckworth. District 10, Brad Schneider. And there's a few. The districts they cover are 1, 4, 5, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, and 17, that they at least have on their endorsement page for Illinois. So there you have it. You know, at this late date, and it's weird because one of the things I wrote on as I was putting the, this week's show together on my website, is my realization that the election really isn't on Tuesday. We finish the election on Tuesday, which is a change over the last X number of years. And more, I guess a third of the people voted early last year, or in 2008, rather, and they expected to be over 40% this year. What happens when it gets to 50-60% and election day is just mop up?
Yeah. I guess we won't be up until midnight then waiting for results.
No, you wouldn't be. They would have the rest of them counted, I would assume. And you just plug in the others. And actually, that's a good thing. Then numbskulls like Rick Scott in Florida can't suppress the vote. If they do it early enough, they allow enough hours to vote. Then that's the way it should be. I mean, there's been the argument for years and years that we needed to have our elections on Sunday and, you know, on a day off, Saturday or a Sunday. Sunday, a lot of people have said, so that everybody can get out there. Well, actually, this changes the argument completely. Don't need to do that. If you do it 3 weeks in advance, 2 weeks, whatever you need, just spread it out.
Oh, absolutely.
And then everybody gets to vote. You know, you do it on your own schedule. Like I said, there I was on a Thursday. And, you know, and Rick talking about the lines. You know, that's the other thing that's amazing about this particular election. For all this talk about enthusiasm gaps, which silly stuff. Well, you got your enthusiasm there. All you have to do is look at all the states and the images from all these different states and how many people want to get out and vote. And that's good.
That someone's willing to stand in line for 2 to 3 hours, which really the only other thing I think people do that for is Black Friday when they go shopping and they wait, you know, and for outside of Best Buy. I think it's really encouraging. I'm inspired by those people who are willing to stand
too.
In line for 3 hours.
It frustrates me a little bit because I'm afraid that some people will walk away because it's too difficult. And that's why it's got to be easy. It's just got to be so easy.
Right.
Can't be, you know, messing with stupid IDs and all that voter suppression. I don't get it, you know, well, I mean, I do get it. I know why certain people want to suppress the vote because they can't win based on their ideas. So the only way they can win is to make sure people don't get to the voting polls, get to the polls. And when they do get there, to be able to turn them away. 773-763-9278. Let's go to the phones. And this is Ryan in Oswego. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
How's it going, Mike?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to ask because I guess regarding climate control, other issues that aren't being talked about in the main media debates. I was wondering in the future when climate control or just climate issues become more prevalent in the next election, do you think that it would be beneficial for one candidate to propose the idea of maybe debating on a more independent market or a more independent media site, like such as something like C-SPAN or anything like that?
Problem is nobody's watching C-SPAN. You know, to be honest, there's not a lot of bang for your buck there.
I understand that, but I mean, even if people are watching these main debates or not, the questions aren't really being offered.
No, they're not. And that's the point, is how do we break through? My feeling is, and I've mentioned this to several people, wouldn't it have been great to have one debate where the questions were asked by alternate media people?
Okay, yeah.
You know, let's and not the same tightly controlled. That's but the problem is both campaigns, they know who they're getting as the moderators. They're approved. The questions may not be approved, but the media don't help because they have this, as I said earlier, very narrowly conscribed list of topics. It's the same old, same old. And in some of the questions are just plain stupid. I mean, what's his name from PBS? Jim Lehrer. You know, what a terrible end to a great career.
Yeah.
Because the dumbest, broadest questions. Ask something specific.
Well, it's not a debate. It's just another TV show.
Yeah, it's a kind of weird. It was. Yeah, they were all kind of weird reality shows. And then the notion that, you know, sure, I get it. Obama was way too low key in the first debate. But then to look at the way the polls shifted after that.
Yeah.
You mean people were really impressed by Mitt Romney's bullying, that's really appealing to them? Wow. Wow. Are we a shallow country or what?
Or fooled by the lack of truth.
Or fooled by the lack. And then that's, you know, but your point is well taken, that we just need to do something different, Ryan. We have to figure out how we get real questions into the debates and how we get specifics in there. And I understand that's the way debates go. They're going to try to direct it. But that's why you ask follow-ups, you know. And that's another thing the campaigns did. They apparently put in the rules that there wouldn't be follow-ups. Well, that's just insane. We can't tolerate that. We can't stand for that. And so, you know, and the other thing I would say is that I don't know why given some of, I'm on, this is not even addressing the debates. I'm sorry, I'm sort of skipping around here, but election reform has got to be at the top of the list. You know, I would hope that day one, you know, the newly reelected Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, says, my first task here is to reform our election process and get the big money out of it. And yeah. But, you know, I don't see that happening either. So
what we need is more people, younger people, growing up and really, really asking for reality out of this, because there's just such a lack of reality. And if you can sift through the reality of the situation and the falseness of everything, you really just kind of get discouraged. And I'm only 21, and I'm trying to be hopeful about everything. But when you see things that are so just constructed purposefully rather than just allowed to be real, it's hopeless almost.
Well, there is a sense of hopelessness. Tom Hartman always says despair is not an option, I agree with that. On the other hand, we live in scary times, and it's not just, you know, with hurricanes that are supercharged by climate change slamming into the East Coast, but it's scary times in terms of, you just mentioned it a second ago, Lisa, and Ryan, I'm impressed that you're calling, you're engaged, have you voted already?
No, I have not.
Are you going to vote?
Yes, I'm definitely going to vote.
Okay. You know, I'm not even going to ask you who you're voting for. I just glad you're out there and at 21, and I wish more 21-year-olds were voted. I have voted in every election, every single election since I was 18. You know, and they passed the law in Michigan when I was living there that you could vote at 18. I think just a few months before that first election, I voted in, and I was very happy about that. And I have voted ever since. And I think this is as rigged as it is. And you're right to be a little bit cynical, because it is rigged to some degree. We don't get philosopher kings in this country.
No.
We get the best we can muster. And actually, all things considered, Obama's pretty good. I look at him as a president and what he's done and the dignity he has restored to our country in 4 years, and how hard he's worked on the economy and what a mess he was left with. I mean, I see a president like George Bush, and it's just embarrassing. And I see a candidate like Romney. Ryan.
I understand. It's just issues such as the extension of the Patriot Act and NDAA, and it just turns me off. I'm not a forceful person. I'm a pacifist. I'm a strong pacifist, but I'm not one who believes in our tactics up till date. And I understand that the tactics weren't so vicious prior to the Bush administration, but I feel as though there could be more done to create a better reputation. And I think that we've created almost a bully reputation among our global reputation.
I totally agree with you. You know, and that's where the right wing, you know, wants to attack President Obama, because he's not a bully. They say he's not tough enough, and he's on an apology tour, which is just insane, stupid thing to say. Obama has increased our stature in the world. Any clear thinking person can see that immediately. You know, the best comment I heard about the division in our country was actually by Alan Grayson. He was on Stephanie Miller's show last week. And he said, the only thing he can figure out is that it's become tribal. It's totally tribal. And I agree that we have retreated into our camps, and there's very little compromise, despite what the right wing says. Obama has tried to compromise. They say, you know, they're really good at the very things they do, accusing the other side of doing. That's what they do best.
Yeah.
But we have retreated into sort of a tribal
state here, mentality, where you hunker down with the people that who think like you do, and I'll hunker down with the people who think like I do, and that's it. And then we just duke it out and hope we can find three or four people in the middle who will swing it our way. It's when you look at the polls and they're saying it's a, you know, a 48 to 47, whatever, that we cannot continue to exist as a country like that.
No, it's especially with the Electoral College, when you have the opportunity for somebody to get elected without popular vote, that's disgusting. That's not a republic. I don't really know what to call that, other than, I don't know. There's got to be another name for it, because we're not protecting a country when we have a minority or a non-popular vote voting for a leader. It personally doesn't make any sense for me. And not that I agree that it's not rigged to the point where somebody outside world can decide the next president or decides how to affect the election so much as to where they can almost decide the next president. And
I'll tell you right now, Ryan, and I'm going to have to let you go because I got some other calls and some business to take care of. The next election is already being decided. You know, there's positioning going on right now. There are people being bought and paid for. The wheels are being set in motion. And I'm glad you're engaged. I really am. And I appreciate, you calling. You sound like a very thoughtful, young man. And I wish you the best. And I thank you very much for calling the show.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good one.
And, have a good election day. Bye bye. 773-763-9278. Let's go to, Alan in Lake Bluff. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. Excellent, total earth show.
I appreciate it.
When I was a little kid, my brother and I used to have a great philosopher, Renaissance man, architect called Buckminster Fuller.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to come over and tap dance for us because he was just an all around neat guy.
Wait. You knew him personally?
Yeah. He used to come over and say, my father's an architect.
I'm so jealous.
Oh, so am I.
And he studied with Buck. He did work with Bucky Fuller, and he studied under Frank Lloyd Wright.
You know, it's interesting. Buckminster Fuller used to be a household name. I bet a lot of people don't even know who he is anymore.
They should be still concerned, because all nanotechnology is based on his basic concepts. That's why they have the Buckyball. If you've ever heard, they've nicknamed one of the small things, one of the nano. Units a buckyball, and it has to do with his geodesic dome. Remember the national change of radar defense? That was all Bucky's dome.
Wow.
Well, you know, Einstein said he wished that his work could be as applicable to the immediate needs of the planet as Bucky's.
Well, the one thing that why I started out Renaissance man is that he came up and he said, we all live on the spaceship Earth. That's the ultimate. And I'm writing a book on mine, but this is a finite planet.
Indeed.
As was eloquently, and that was the biggest thing about An Inconvenient Truth, not the global or the climate change, it's the fact that we have one planet and we have anywhere between 2.5 to 4 times the resource needs for all these people. We need 2.5 to 4 times that to service all the people that are presently here, not the ones even coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you get into this equation of you've got a finite planet and you've got an expansionary population and needs. Either some of us are going to have to do without, or we're going to have to pair the population, or we're going to somehow have to live and learn to live together, and we're not doing that.
Yeah, and you know, and so when you get to discussions of not just Roe v. Wade, but contraception, my God, the contraception.
The implications are astounding.
I know, with a planet that's going to end up with 9 billion people by the middle of the century, we can't be debating the issue of whether people should be using contraception. We're done with that. We're moving on, folks.
The bottom line is we're on a spaceship or Earth. If we think of it in terms of we're in a container. Just because we can't see over the horizon because it curves off, the fact is we're in a containment here.
Yeah, yeah. It's the only one we've got right now. We're looking for other planets. We haven't found them yet.
Yeah, yeah. And Gore was right on in that one little statement about the resources and, you know, the fact that we're in a finite situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's astounding to me that we've gotten into this discussion to dispute science that has brought us so far in so many different places, and that we want to privatize or monetarize the whole thing because if it doesn't have any money value, it doesn't exist, supposedly, in our capitalistic society, which is insanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's also in my book.
Well, and you know what, Alan? When you get your book out, you got to send me a copy, all right?
Okay. Will do, and great show, and I love flowers.
It always comes down to that, doesn't it, Alan?
No, it's they're beautiful. Dave, if you've ever seen a show on primitive flowers, that's what started the whole, sorry about the pun, the blossoming of life on this planet.
Okay, I gave that to you. There you go.
Yeah.
You get your own ding there. But you're right, flowers. What do we do without flowers? But you know what? In the end, we talk about it in this show. I mean, if we're not addressing global climate change, then we're certainly not even addressing how we're managing to kill millions of bees with and by whatever is doing it, whether it's the low-grade pesticide or whatever
else.
Isn't
that amazing? You know, there's a whole province in China that their bees have been gone for a long time. They're producing prize pairs by going up in the spring with little sticks and feathers, and all the human beings are pollinating, which is a mindless kind of... What kind of insanity are we living in?
I don't know. That's amazing. I didn't know that. That's an interesting... That is really scary. Oh,
my
God.
Prize pairs. It's in a valley. And just the way we do our vote here. I do programming, and you can make a program, write something to the screen, and write something to the print that's totally different. It doesn't matter. We live in fiction if we start relying on these electronic voting with private proprietary programs.
Well, that's that. When I was talking about the first day, you talk about the transforming the voting, you know, day one of the new term for the president, and it starts with the electronic voting. We take it out of the hands of the private companies. Yeah. It's like, you do not touch our voting machines, and this is how we do it. And I heard Norman Goldman talking the other day about how he would do it. And, there has to be.
I lived in Europe. It's paper there.
I'm fine with that. I'm down with that. Let's do paper. Yeah.
It's lovely the way you put this whole thing in the context that we're waiting for the finish day on Tuesday. I just love that.
Yeah, it is. We're already voting. Yeah, it's not voting day. It's the finish of voting day. So, all right, I got to go, Alan.
Okay.
Thank you. Great
thank
hearing
you
from you.
Thanks for the great show.
I appreciate it. You have a great Sunday.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. 773-763-9278. Debbie in St. Charles, I'm going to get to you in a second. I got to take care of some biz, including a tip from the Care of Trees. Actually, it's a New York Times article that was posted on the Care of Trees Facebook page, quoting from the Times. All right, and this actually fits into this conversation today in a general sense. Here's their quote. "We have underestimated the importance of trees. They are not merely pleasant sources of shade, but a potentially major answer to some of our most pressing environmental problems. We take them for granted, but they are a near miracle. In a bit of natural alchemy called photosynthesis, for example, trees turn one of the seemingly most insubstantial things of all, sunlight, into food for insects, wildlife, and people, and use it to create shade, beauty, and wood for fuel, furniture, and homes. For all of that, the unbroken forest that once covered much of the continent is now shot through with holes. Humans have cut down the biggest and best trees and left the runts behind. What does that mean for the genetic fitness of our forests? No one knows for sure. For trees and forests are poorly understood on almost all levels.
well-spoken. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees and preserve what we have now. See thecareoftrees.com, like them on Facebook, or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees, their businesses, people, and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, this is Tavis Smiley.
And I'm Cornell West.
Join us this afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. for the return of Smiley and West and the Tavis Smiley Show to Chicago.
Once again, we're bringing unique perspectives and provocative conversations to the hometown of Curtis Mayfield.
And we are delighted that Chicago's progressive talk is our new home.
That's today from 2 to 4 p.m.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
This is 820 AM WCPT Willow Springs, 92.7 FM WCPT Arlington Heights, 92.5 FM WCPY DeKalb, and 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest, Chicago's progressive talk.
No Senator's son either.
Nope.
Not many of us are.
Nope.
There's a few of them out there. Yeah. Son. Get out and vote if you haven't already, and if you can. Let's take another quick phone call before I move on to quickly to another topic, and that is Debbie in St. Charles. How you doing? You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Thank you. What a great song, Fortunate One by Creedence. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I was calling to tell you, I agree with what you said very wholeheartedly, that our president has brought dignity back to our country. I'm a flight attendant. In fact, I'm just about to leave to China. And when Bush was in office, especially the last 6 years of his illegal presidency, I would never speak English. I am dual language. I'm German, and I'm also an American. And I never, ever spoke English when I left this country. Even though more people around the world speak English than German, I would much rather deal with the confusion of trying to understand what I was saying in German in another country than speaking English. I didn't even go Canadian because I wanted no questions asked because people hated us so much. I mean, really hated us. Here we are blasting away in other countries. We won't go along with treaties concerning climate change and global warming. It was embarrassing. And I really hate to say that because I do love my country. I just don't recognize it anymore so much. And I certainly didn't under Bush.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there are people out there who would say, oh, you're an apologist, too. There you go.
No, I'm not. No, I support this country. My two nephews fought in the war, and I supported them as well. But the way I support our troops is to, if they are to go into harm's way, I would rather support them for the benefit of our country when all other negotiations have come to despair, rather than to put them in harm's way as though there's some, as though someone's playing G.I. Joe with living beings.
You're very eloquent. You should run for office.
No, I don't think I could, but I have thought about it, actually. But I also agree with you on campaign reform, because I think that if we get the big money out of it, you know, your show is so good about enlightening us as far as plants and how to grow. I have an organic garden, and how to treat our earth and be better stewards of the environment on our planet. And I think if we could get the corporatists out of the political arena, then we could have more concern about that. But people are so concerned right now about what's going on in politics as far as how they can get the person they want in office, rather than, oh my gosh, you know, we have to consider the earth that we live on. It's very sad. When we fly over Brazil, you can see the rainforest and the fires down there. When I fly into China, you can see the cloud of coal. In fact, if I sound stuffed up, it's because I have the Shanghai grunge. It's what we call it. It's when your sinuses get so infected from coal dust. And this is unnecessary.
We need more people like you telling the and the point you make here is that we look inward. We do not look at the rest of the world. We are not good citizens of the world and have not been for quite a while. We need to realize that there is a big planet and we're all connected right now, and we're not doing that very well.
No, we're not. When we land in Germany, and especially the northern European countries, when you look down, you see solar panels everywhere.
Yeah. I know.
Everywhere.
I know. We're being held hostage.
Can't that get a ding?
Oh, solar panels. So Germany.
There we go.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, and why are we not doing this here? Because we're held hostage by the coal, oil, and gas interests. You know, and there are, you know what their argument is? Well, you know, let's go to solar now. What's going to power you next week? Well, you know what? If you don't start, you're never going
to
get there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to hear that stupid argument, which is, well, what's going to power us until we get it done? Well, yeah, coal and gas, I guess, until we get it done. But we're not getting it done.
Right.
We're not paying any attention to it at all. It's just, it's nutty. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're fracking away the planet.
Well,
yeah.
And I hear all the time when I'm speaking in public, people say, well, you know, solar is evolving. It's not perfect. Well, you know what? Coal certainly isn't perfect, and it's not evolving. Oil's not evolving. Why is that okay, but solar's not okay? Now I'm fired up.
You get a ding. All right. Well, listen, I got to let you go, Debbie. Great point. So glad to hear from you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. We're wrapping up a couple of things. Excuse me. Annie says we should give a shout-out to the linemen workers restoring power to our friends on the East Coast.
You're here.
I'll give them a ding. All right, great. Zan says everyone needs to watch Mo Rocca's documentary, Electoral Dysfunction. And it's not electoral. It's electoral dysfunction. I'm really cranky.
Man.
I'm cranky today.
You need to go vote again.
Chicago, I can do that. And it's to answer a lot of the concerns my caller was bringing up. Electoral dysfunction. Good. That was that wonderful call from Ryan. And a couple of minutes. I have this on my website. If you pick up the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, there's an article that I wrote in there called My Favorite Plant. And what that's about is it's supposed to be, you know, your favorite plant. Well, in this case, it's a juniper that showed up in my yard. I didn't plant it there. And it's now like 4 or 5 years old, and it's like 4 feet tall, 5 feet tall. Really cute plant. You'll see the picture on my website.
It's adorable. I love how you say it chose you.
It chose me. And then I found out
other people have had those junipers appear in their yard because apparently the birds, you know, they eat the berries, they poop them out, and then they show up in your yard. So I want you folks listening within the sound of my voice and follow me on Twitter and so forth. Send me pictures of your junipers that have, excuse me, popped up in your yard.
Not the birds that pooped up in
No,
your
not
yard.
The birds, but the junipers. Send me pictures, preferably with you next to them. And we're talking about probably Juniperus virginiana. That's the common one. But Christy Weber told me one popped up in her yard. My friend Stephen Marcus has up. And if you let it grow, send me a picture of it. We'll put as many as we can on the website. It doesn't count if you planted it. It has to have appeared on its own. That's the way this works. And then we'll put those out there. Lisa, love your hair, by the way.
What's happening? These headphones are an issue.
All right, everybody.
Because you got so fired up. No discussion.
Get out there and vote, please. Vote green if you can. And as we always say, please.
Please.
Go green or...
Go home.